Another win for Trinity Western.
This is a good win. Like, it's a really good win. It's a slam dunk for religious freedom, and I'm really happy to see it.
On the feature today, a look at the details of last week's BC Appeals Court ruling in that case. Also, another positive court ruling last week in Alberta on a government attempt to shut down a big homeschool board. More pressure on the Ontario government over Bill 28. And the federal bill on transgenderism is ready to go back to Parliament for a final vote.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Trinity Western University in BC has won another round in the legal battle over accreditation of its proposed law school. A five-judge panel of the BC Court of Appeal ruled unanimously last week that efforts by the Law Society of BC to deny graduates of that law school admission to the BC Bar constituted a violation of the freedom of religion rights of the school and its supporters. Here's an actual quote from the ruling. The court said, and I'm quoting, "A well-intentioned majority acting in the name of tolerance and liberalism can, if unchecked, impose its views on the minority in a manner that is, in fact, intolerant and illiberal." End quote. At issue is Trinity's so-called community covenant, in which students and faculty agree to confine their sexual activity exclusively to heterosexual marriage. Critics say that discriminates against the LGBTQ community, but the court disagreed. And Trinity's Amy Robertson says the argument doesn't really hold water because the university doesn't refuse admission to gay students.
Well, there are lots of gay people who do attend Trinity Western and they sign the covenant. They just agree to abide by covenant while they're here.
This is the second appeal court ruling to uphold Trinity's position. Nova Scotia's highest court also sided with the school. But in Ontario, a decision went the other way. That case is going to the Supreme Court of Canada. ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten appeared as an intervener in all three of the cases. We'll be speaking to him on the feature interview later in the program. A Court of Queen's Bench judge in Alberta has granted a temporary injunction to reinstate accreditation for the Trinity Christian School Association and its Wisdom Homeschooling contractor. The province had revoked that accreditation last month, but on Friday, Justice E.J. Simpson overturned that decision. He says the ruling is meant to protect both students and taxpayers pending the outcome of a full hearing set for January 5th. Trinity lawyer Jay Cameron says this is a temporary injunction, actually the first of a three-step process.
There is an injunction restoring the status quo as before October 25th, but there is no funding until the hearing on January 5th. If we're successful on January 5th, then it's possible funding would be restored. But following January 5th, there's going to be a hearing for judicial review. That has yet to be scheduled, but it'll probably be sometime in mid to late 2017. That might be optimistic given the backlog in the courts.
Cameron says, in essence, the temporary injunction is a vindication of the school's position that the government violated the principles of natural justice in the way it pulled the accreditation.
I think it's very unfortunate the way that the province chose to handle this. It was a grave injustice. It's a grave violation of the rule of law. And it's a highly inappropriate and also unconstitutional action on behalf of the government. And I wish that someone over there would reconsider and make a better decision going forward here. They've seen the impact on thousands of people that this irrational and unjudicious decision made.
Education Minister David Egan, who made the initial decision, says it's important to note that the ruling on Friday was not a final determination on the merits of the case, but rather just a temporary injunction. He says the government is standing by its position because of allegations of financial irregularities in the way Trinity and Wisdom conducted their operations. In Ontario, the government's getting ready to hold a vote on Bill 28. This is the law that essentially redefines the family unit in that province. Andrea Morozik with Cardis Family says it's rife with problems.
The point, of course, is to make it easier for gay couples to not need to adopt their own children or go through any arduous, difficult, financially burdensome procedures in order to adopt their own children. I can see that as a legitimate concern, but the way they're going about it is very sweeping. So I'm wondering why, for example, they wouldn't choose to address the obstacles in the adoption regime and how difficult that is, but instead they are eradicating communicating basic principles of what it has meant to be in a family and sweeping out terms like mother and father. There's no reference even to men and women in the bill. There's only reference to birth parents. So it's not something that only people who are concerned about the state of the family have criticized. Surrogacy lawyers, for example, or people in fertility law have also had concerns about the bill because it confuses and messes around with what it means to parent. And at the end of the day, the state has one interest, or should have one interest, that is, children should not be abandoned. And actually, this bill leaves room for that concern to arise, that children would not be cared for by any parent whatsoever. It's a muddled bill, and I don't even know where to begin to talk about some of the problems with it.
Several ARPA chapters in Ontario are trying to raise public awareness about the bill. They've purchased radio ads on stations in four markets, Niagara, Hamilton, London, and Oxford County, urging people to contact the government on this. ARPA Oxford's James Van Gerp.
There needs to be a voice out there that holds our government to account for the decisions they're pushing forward. For example, this bill here, the family is the building block of society and something that's been entrenched for many years, and to change that by law within 30 days is a bit unheard of. So we want to make sure the general population is aware of what's going on in our government.
A vote on that bill not expected now until next week at the earliest. And Parliament's Justice and Human Rights Committee has wrapped up its consideration of Bill C-16. That's the one that would add the terms gender identity and gender expression to the grounds under which discrimination will be prohibited under the Canada Human Rights Act and the Criminal Code. Manitoba MP Ted Falk is the vice chair of that committee. I talked to him last Thursday, shortly after the committee wrapped up its consideration of the bill. He says there was a real problem with the fact that they decided not to take any public input on this.
The argument at committee was that sexual expression and sexual identity had been presented in previous bills, and there had been lots of testimony at previous committee hearings and at Senate hearings, and people were free to go back and check the records of those minutes and reread all the testimony that was provided at those hearings. You can say that, and it's accurate. I don't think it's adequate. I think we should always be ready and willing to listen to stakeholders that have an interest in legislation that we're passing. That's part of the process that I think was flawed, and I told the committee I didn't feel we as a committee had done our job. I think we failed Canadians, we failed their constituents, and certainly we failed this piece of legislation because we didn't have an opportunity to listen to arguments either for or against it. We didn't have any opportunities to include any safeguards or to strengthen the bill.
The House of Commons expected to vote on C-16 later this month. Back with more after this.
Ontario Bill 28, the so-called All Families Are Equal Act, removes all references to mother, father, and natural parents from all of Ontario's laws. It allows any one, two, three, or four adults to agree to be parents to a child not yet conceived. The child may be conceived in a lab, born by a surrogate, and turned over after birth to be shared by four so-called parents, none of whom need to be a biological parent of the child. If Bill 28 sounds like an arrangement better fit for car sharing than child sharing, speak up. Call and email your Ontario MPP today to urge them to oppose this bill.
As you heard on the news, the BC Court of Appeal has sided with Trinity Western University in its attempts to start up a law school next year. ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten was one of the interveners in this case, as well as two other provincial challenges to the law school. I reached him at ARPA's Ottawa office to talk about last week's decision. Andre, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Al.
So the Trinity Western case in BC was resolved last week at the Court of Appeal level. As we heard on the news, it was a win for Trinity. Can you contextualize it for us a little bit in terms of what the court said?
So this is a good win. It's a really good win. It's a slam dunk for religious freedom, and I'm really happy to see it. I had feelings, I think I've predicted on this show before, that we would win this case, but I thought that we'd probably win more on just the technical administrative grounds. But this was definitely a solid constitutional win for religious freedom. All five judges unanimously decided together to delve into those deep questions of diversity and tolerance and religious freedom and so on. And they really stood up for religious freedom. They said this needs to be protected. What has happened in this case is that the majority, being the majority of lawyers in BC, have discriminated against, they've infringed on the religious freedoms of a minority, being Trinity Western University, its staff and its students.
You alluded to this. When we last spoke about this, the whole case was being argued primarily, at least the Law Society was arguing it and Trinity was arguing it primarily on process, on the notion that it was the process that was unfair to Trinity and that it wasn't so much about religious freedom as it was about the I's being dotted and the T's being crossed. Now, ARPA brought the religious freedom and freedom of association argument to the table. Are you surprised that the court kind of diverted from the main arguments and did the focus the way it did?
Well, I'd say it was about 50-50. The arguments of the Law Society and Trinity Western, probably a good half of their time was spent on process, and then they also did spend time on the constitutional issues, but it was definitely all of the interveners, and there were quite a few on both sides, all of the interveners really focused in on those questions of constitutional law, the big, broad principles of what does it mean to live together in a free society where you should have freedoms like freedom of association and freedom of religion. The court did spend time on those technical questions too. The first half of their decision does deal with that. And they did find problems there. They did find that the benchers had fettered some of their discretion that was questionable. They found that the benchers did not properly balance the statutory objectives. So that's the piece of legislation that gives them authority and tells them what their objectives are. They didn't balance those objectives with the actual charter rights that are being infringed, in this case, religious freedom. So they did engage in that kind of administrative analysis. But then they go right into the constitutional analysis and say, well, look, we have to deal with the constitutional analysis as well, because that's what helps inform whether or not they properly balanced. So the second half of the judgment is that deep, rich, and in my view, beautiful discussion on religious freedom and equality and diversity and tolerance and so on.
You were one of the lawyers intervening. ARPA had intervener status here. As a lawyer, when you look at a judgment like this, you're always looking to see how many of your arguments were reflected in the final analysis. Have you had a chance to go through it and say, you know what, the judge has really heard ARPA's arguments specifically, and what were those and were they reflected there?
It's always difficult to tell exactly, you know, who they heard it from best. There is overlap of argument from intervener to intervener, and there is overlap between the interveners and the actual parties, but there were a couple of references there, which I think we were definitely arguing and did show up in the decision. For example, at paragraph 150, the court reiterates something that ARPA was definitely arguing over and over again, that there is a limited reach of the charter. The charter applies to the government as a limit on the government. The charter applies to the law society as a limit on its powers, but the charter does not apply to a private institution like Trinity Western. Trinity Western does not have to guard the equality rights of other people. It's part of the free civil society. So that was picked up. We've been saying that all along. And another key argument that ARPA really was focused in on is the fact that in this case, unlike what the other side was saying this is a conflict of charter rights between Section 15 equality rights of sexual minorities versus Section 2A religious freedom rights of Christians. But ARPA was saying, no, that is not what's happening here. What's happening here is that the Section 2A religious freedom of Trinity is being undermined by the Law Society, and also the Section 15 equality rights of Trinity students, the right to be treated equally also on the grounds of religion, that too is implicated on the side of Trinity. But there are no charter rights being violated as far as the LGBTQ community goes. And the court affirms that. They said in paragraph 115 that this case does not involve a direct contest between charter rights. So there's no charter rights in conflict here. And why is that? Because the case is about the state, through the Law Society, discriminating against or interfering with the deeply held religious views of the Trinity Western community.
So what's next? I mean, we have the opposite ruling in Ontario, where their Court of Appeals said that the Law Society of Upper Canada was okay to deny Trinity. Now we've got the BC decision. The Nova Scotia decision is not going to go to the Supreme Court. I'm assuming the BC one will. This leaves the Supreme Court with a bit of a quandary.
So if the Benchers Society in BC decides to appeal, then certainly the Supreme Court's going to have to sort out, well, which one of them got it right, Ontario or BC, because BC Court of Appeal does call out the Ontario Court of Appeal on a couple occasions where, like, well, you didn't get it quite right, which I really, really appreciated. But we have to wait to see if BC Benchers are going to appeal. I mean, they've now been roundly beaten by not just the lower court judge, but now by a unanimous panel of five judges at their Court of Appeal. And so I think that it's definitely possible that they might say, look, we tried fighting this twice. They originally, in BC, they originally had agreed with the Trinity Western Law School. So clearly the law has been on the side of Trinity Western all along. Ontario is an anomaly. I mean, if we look at the total number of judges now who have sided with Trinity Western, there's 12 judges who have ruled in favor of Trinity Western. Only 6 have ruled against it. So I think and I hope that BC just leaves alone and that Trinity Western can begin building their law school as soon as possible. If the Ontario case goes on to the Supreme Court, you know, here's to hoping that the Supreme Supreme Court listens to the BC Court of Appeal rather than the Ontario Court of Appeal decision, because the BC one is definitely the better one, that's for sure.
Okay, we'll leave it at that, and we'll keep following this. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.